Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Hello, welcome.
Hi.
Okay, we're in chapter 23. We're at the end of the kingdom of Yehuda. And, you know, they sometimes talk about a light before it goes out, it flicks, you know. So this was the last great king of Yehuda. And he started about Tshuva movement. And there was no other king like him as far as trying to turn the people back to Hashem. Some people say that had he lived longer, it might have worked. But he, unfortunately, we're going to see. He was king for a reasonable, as far as the kings go. We'll get to you know why you know how he died in the end in a few minutes, but he goes down in history as a king that that brought the people back. It actually was predicted in the earlier books where it talked about Yeravam ben Nevat when he split off the kingdom. And so it mentioned there that there would come a time when his kingdom would be destroyed, and on the place where he set up his own form of the Jewish religion. He set up his own temple with the golden calves, who were the symbol of his tribe of, I shouldn't say golden, he had two oxen, which were the symbol of the tribe of Yosef. And he wanted to make a contrary kingdom to that of Yehuda. But he goofed, and he did a terrible thing. And it was the prophet told him that there would come a later king, where the who would destroy the remnants of these the synagogue that was made to the idols, and that and we're going to see that. But the king that was predicted, and that, it actually said his name over there, was that's the king that we're with right now, Yoshiyahu. Okay, so Yishlach, chapter 23, Yishlach HaMelech V'yaseh Lo Kol Zikni Hu Yerushalayim. Now, we're going to see that with other kings, when they're told bad news, they shoot the messenger. They don't want to hear it. They want to ignore it. They want to push it off. It takes a very brave king to deal with it. And he was, that's one of his things. They found the scroll, and he doesn't hide anything. He says, all right, let's call everybody together. And verse 2, V'yala melech beis Hashem, he came to the temple, v'kol Yehuda v'kol Yerushalayim. He called all the residents of the important people of Yehuda and all the residents of Yerushalayim. V'kohanim v'naviim, and the kohanim, kol am, the katan ad gadol, young and old, everybody. V'yikru v'zneim es kol divrei sefer abisin, nimsa beis Hashem. He read them the Torah. He read them the prophecy. He said, now, he came pretty much with the philosophy of the house of David, that it's never too late. That we can always, an evil decree can always be turned over. We can always fix. As bad as it sounds, it can still be changed. That was the message that he had. Verse 3, V'yamana melech ala amud, and he stood on the bima there, V'yikras et sabris with Ne'asham, and he made a covenant. Now, when a king makes a covenant, everybody says yes. That's the nature of the people. Whatever the king says, they go along with it. We're going to see that he was more enthusiastic than all of the people. The people at this point got used to one king does like this, and then and then comes along another king, and he does like that, and then comes along another king. And the people are wishy-washy. They go depending on who their leader was, and that's really what it happened. Lechasar Hashem Lishmor Mitzvosav. He made a covenant that all right, we're going to keep the Torah and we're going to keep the testimonies, the statutes, the koleis, and we're not just going to do it just because it's a thing to do, but we're going to do it with all of our heart. You know, we always say that in the Shema, b'kol avavcha, all of our heart, but b'kol nefesh, and all of our soul. L'alchem es divei abris ezo saksuvim al sefer hazeh. The Yam and Kolen, and everybody, the entire people, had to agree. They all passed through. Verse 4, v'itzava melchu eskochiyo akayim gadov eskohana mishnah, v'esher meisav hoti mehechol Hashem. Now, part of wanting to do good, and this is a famous concept, if you want to do good, you also have to stop doing bad. In other words, it's tzur meira, get rid of the evil, and then vasei tov. So in other words, it's not enough if a person says, all right, let's say they're corrupt or they've stolen. So they're not going to do that anymore. but they've got to get back what they stole. They've got to fix what they've done. In other words, the part of doing good is removing the bad. And there are many times that people say, okay, from now on I'm going to be good. But then they don't get rid of the bad. One of the problems we had was that everybody had these backyard bummas, these little backyard places where they would offer sacrifices. And when they had good kings, the sacrifices went to Hashem. When they had other kings, they sacrificed to the idols. But as long as they had this little area in the back, it was part of the house. Part of, you bought a house, you had the backyard bummer, you had the place where you could bring your... and so as long as you had that, the people flipped. They could go one way. And so what he did was he did a great cleaning. He said, we've got to get rid of this. We've got to remove those things that we've been gone down the wrong path. The amazing thing is that even in the temple itself, they had these things. People would serve, they brought them to the temple compound. So he said, the people have to remove Lahotzi Mehechol Hashem, as Kol HaKeivim Asum LeBaal, anything that was made for Baal. Now, one of the things about Jews, we have a mitzvah not to waste things. And going back to Shaul HaMelech, when we destroyed HaMelech, the people were looking at these big, beautiful cows and the beautiful sheep and this thing. You know, what a waste. We don't want it. Let's recycle this. I've got a good business. We can use this. And we're open to that argument. In other words, we don't like to see things wasted. So the problem is that sometimes if you say something and it doesn't work right, you'd better off getting a new one. Because they make them better now, you know. So there comes a time when sometimes there's nothing like the old ones, right? But then there are other times where you've got to get rid of it and you would be better off just buying a new one. And so the people had said, well, these vessels were used for the Baal, but, you know, we can use them for Hashem now. So he said, no, we've got to get rid of all of these things. We've got to get rid of anything that might be tarnished or tainted, that might be tainted in any way. So he said, let's get rid of all those things for the Baal Shekhol Tzvah Shemayim, whatever it was, the Serfim. And he went and he burned them, B'chutz Yerushalayim, B'shtimos Kardrim and Noses, up from Bezel. Now he did an interesting thing. He brought the ashes to the synagogue that had been to the other form of the Jewish religion that the Yeravim had started, which was in Bezel, the Hishpis HaSakramim. And destroyed, there were certain priests that were there for idols. This word, the Hebrew word hishbish, is the same word as Shabbos. Shabbos is like the business is closed. We have a Shabbos means that everything closes down. He closed down the temple and he put him out of business. That's what it means. He put him out of business, all these priests that were given by Mahuvakti Babamuspar. You have these different little way stations where the different people worshipped, and when they would worship there, they'd have a caretaker. There'd be like a tiny little temple, and so he destroyed these little way stations. You could learn it even stronger, this word vihishbish. He got rid of them. You could learn that he killed them, but it's not so clear from the word. Vihishbish means he put them out of business. He closed them. Mine says he abolished the pagan priests, but there are different ways. If you kill them, obviously you abolish them, but he got rid of them. But anybody that worshipped the Baal, L'shem, they were sun worshippers, L'yireach, the moon worshippers, L'mazolus, L'kolsi, people were, they worshipped everything. In a pagan society, they worshipped cats, they worshipped insects, they were, unbelievably, we had that Baal Zvuv, right, the fly, they worshipped the fly, you know, like they were colorful. I mean, you name it, and they worshipped it. It was just whatever you want to come up with. Verse 6, Hashem, he took out the Asherah trees from the house of Hashem, Al Nachal Kidron. He took them to Nachal Kidron, Yisavosob and Nachal Kidron, and he burnt them over there. The Edekal Offer, and they made sure that people wouldn't recycle this. They pounded it into ashes and dust. Yishlach Hatzafra Al Kibre Bnei Am. And they threw the ashes on the graves of, they threw it in the cemetery. Verse 7.
The commentary says that they did it over the graves who had worshipped him during their lifetime.
I see. Almost to say, like, you know, this was your God. Look what happened to it now. You know, it's like
your God is dust, and you're dust, and you know, that's it.
Right. And people made a whole big thing about this, like it was something, and then look, it's just dust. Verse 7, Yitzhak says, and he destroyed the houses of the Hebrew word Kadeshin. Again, the Hebrew is sometimes different than the translation. I don't know why translations like to use certain words the way they do. The word Kadesh usually means a prostitute. We had that before in the Chumash, where it says Yehuda stops by the lady, it calls her Hakadesha. Kadesh means holy. Hakadesha means the opposite of holy.
Unholy.
So that's the Hebrew word over. He destroyed the houses of unholiness that were next to the house of Hashem. We mentioned that the a part of the worship of idols had to do with prostitution and the immoral. That was part of the appeal of the idols, is that they used murder, which was that they would make human sacrifices, and then of course they kept the money of the person who they made a human sacrifice, and they had immoral behavior as well, and they had the idol. They were all part of that religion that they did, and it had a certain appeal to people, and it enabled them to do those kinds of things.
Yeah, when a holy service is going
right.
on.
But it's very much our service is very much, we keep separated. We don't have any part of our service. In other words, in their religious services, they included sexuality as part of their service and part of the attraction. And it could be. It's funny, you see the billboards for like brands of alcohol, and they always have nice looking women that are like, that's part of the, if you drink this alcohol, then you have the, so they could be, they use that to get attract worshipers if they had certain types of women there that would attract, but with us that's not part of the, when we relate to Hashem, we don't mix the two. With very so husband, women and men are kept separate during the religious. Perhaps the reality is that women are more spiritual than men. We have a certain tradition in a certain way that is a certain spirituality, or that the Jewish women have had, and that needs to be satisfied. And so, to begin with, the conservatives or the reform don't offer as much, for that it's not as intense of a worship. So, what happens is the percentage of people that participate, it's always heavier on women than it is men. And it's to the point where they have trouble getting men to services because it's become a problem there. But there is a spiritual drive. Now the Orthodox, to the extent that they don't offer women something, so then if they don't, then they run the risk that women look for other avenues to. People need to be satisfied spiritually, and so. If you don't offer avenues to do that, then you run the. And that was part of the problem that in Europe, it was a different society, and there were different, people had different needs. And when they first came to America, they didn't offer education to the women, and they didn't. There weren't always ways for them to participate in Jewish life, and so that's always a mistake, if you don't have an avenue for somebody to. But this is something else over here. This is was the use of sexuality to attract a certain crowd and to get people to services. There's a temple in town that had used free alcohol Friday nights to attract people to their service. What?
Yeah.
But young people and these men and women, it's the same. Well, because they figure, what gets people? How do we get people in the doors? They're not going to come for Judaism. We have to offer booze, right? What did they call it? They had a cute name. I forgot what it was, like Smirnoff and Shabbos. I don't remember what it was. But that hasn't been our thing. But the idols, the other religions, they always used various means of attracting people there. Some people don't learn. Some people say that at one time during the previous king who had been an idol. See, this wasn't the first year of his reign, so it's hard to imagine that it took him so long to get rid of these people. He says here that these women were weavers. They would weave Anoshim Argos. They weaved tapestries and things for the idols, but it was also a place where women would be in public, where they could meet people. I guess if they wove. The women were weaving. That was like like the bar maybe where they would go meet with at the weaving. It's difficult to know the exact what was done there. Okay, moving along. Verse 8.
But he was only 8 years old.
When he started, right?
So
So it might have taken him a while till he was ready to make. And it could be that once he read the people, and apparently beforehand, the people during the times of his father and his grandfather had worshipped idols and done all these things. And so when he brought everybody in the covenant, everybody agreed. That's it. Finally, we decided we're getting rid of all the idols. So now he had the legal authority to finally demolish all of these. Until then, it was, all right, you know, you do what you want, I do what I want, and everything was still existed. Verse 8, and he took, now, we mentioned part of the problem was is that people were fickle. They would stop doing something now for a little while, and then they'd go back to it. So what he did was he made sure they wouldn't go back to it. He made the temples, the idols were superstitious. And part of their superstition was that if it came in contact with the dead, they wouldn't use it. So he went and he contaminated all of the. It's almost like the Muslims. They say if you take a pig, like the Muslims run away because they don't want to touch a pig or something. That they always used to joke that if you coated the bullets with lard or something, then the Muslims would, because they don't go to heaven or whatever if they get touched with the pig. There was always talk like that in Israel. I don't know enough about all the Muslim culture to, but they don't like to touch pigs or dogs or certain things that they have. I don't know exactly. But he made sure to make impure these idols. And these were the places where the Kohanim had worshipped over there, and he destroyed them. Now, the interesting thing was, is that he didn't limit himself only to Jewish territory, to the territory of Yehuda. He went to the territory that had been conquered from the 10 tribes. So some people say by this time it was like open land. There were pockets of Jews who had lived there. And he was now the only active Jewish king. So de facto he became king over the 10 tribes now. Many people say that Yirmiyahu went and brought back segments of the 10 tribes to live there. Now, once he destroyed them, these Kohanim were out of work. So what did they do? They came back to the base of Egypt and said, all right, now we'll go back to the temple and work over there. So they wouldn't let him back so quick. Verse 9, we couldn't have the same Kohanim that were working over there. We couldn't have him come back to them. He mochu matzos, but he would let them eat matzos. He would let them eat the holy foods. He just wouldn't let them do the service. That was because they had participated in the idol worship. He said they can't come back. Yeah. Verse 10, the time esetofus, and he went and he defiled the tofus. Now, one of the places that we had trouble with was there was a famous area where they used to put Jewish children through the fire. That was his great grandfather had been put through fire, and they had a special place where they had that ceremony. They had their certain shrines and places where they had, and he wanted to make sure they wouldn't do this anymore, so he defiled that place. And they called that valley, when we describe hell, we call it Gehenna, from this valley, because there's nothing worse than torturing a baby through fire, you know, taking a little innocent baby and putting them through slow burn. And that was what they did with they would beat the drums as they tortured the little babies and, you know, for the idol there. That valley, so it became like a description of Gehenna was that valley. We also know that, you know, the idea of the fire and burning, and a lot of that came from what took place in this Begay Ben Hinnom. That's the same word as Gehenna. The Bilti Lava Yisha Beno Vesbito Be'esh, that people would bring their sons and daughters in the fire.
So when they talk about the fires of hell,
that's right.
That's it.
That's it, yeah. Mm-hmm. And verse 11, now there's more work to be done. He destroyed, they had a type of worship where they had special horses that would gallop up to greet the sun every morning when the sun rose. And so there were certain chariots that waited for like the seeing the daybreak. And as soon as the new sun would come, these chariots would like rise. Again, they had a lot of colorful religions, a lot of colorful things. He destroyed the horses, the Shernostu Malki Huda. And these were Jewish kings that they had these horse greeters to greet the sun. Here comes the sun. Mevoi beis Hashem alishkas nelson melech hasrisim asher b'parvadim esmar Hashem esharafei. And he burned them down. He destroyed these horses, and these had become like shrines, museums, things that people had gone to see or to watch. and he made sure that he destroyed them. Verse 12, that's Mizbo'ah, Asher al Gagali, and then there were things on the rooftops that people would go to the mountaintops and worship. Elias Achaz, Asher Asu Malchuda, and some of the kings were more susceptible to it than the people because they had contact with, there were foreign governments that existed that would interact with the kings. Sometimes they married foreign princesses, sometimes they had foreign advisors, and these were pagans. And so the pagans would have these idols in the city. So these things had to be destroyed. It's got Shiras and Menashe, and these were built by Menashe b'Sheikh Hatzeres b'Ez Hashem Notatzamel. He just totally got rid of them. The Yoris Misham v'Hishlik Asafrim, and he threw the ashes on Nachal Kidron. And again, he did a really good house cleaning. It really needed it. There were these fragments that were left over from previous kings and previous practices. That's the Bamas Shal Pnei Yishalayim Asher Yimin Lahar Amashkut, and the Bamas that would Asher, and these were built by Shlomo's wives. The further back something goes, the harder it is to get rid of. These were from the times of King Solomon that were built by Shlomo. Lastro Shiket Sidon Lekimosh Shiket Moav Lamilkam Tovas Bnei Amon Tima Hamelah. And people would say, you know, how can you do this? The other kings didn't get rid of them. He got rid of them. Verse 14. Some things he couldn't get rid of because they were, you know, if people worshipped on a mountaintop, but he made them impure so that people wouldn't go back there. Verse 14. Shabbos and Mitzvot. He broke down the altar. He says, "Shem v'yamoles makoma atzamos adam," and he put made him into a cemetery. He put human bones there. The Muslims. Our good friends, our cousins, on the Temple Mount, they have an area which they made a cemetery because they heard that the Kohanim would one day want to come back to take over the temple. So somehow if they put buried people there, that would prevent, they have a legend like that. And so there is up there on the, there is an area where they have human bones. That's part of their, someone had gave them that idea. Not recently, it's been there for like a few hundred years. They have like a an area where their bones or people buried on the Temple Mount. The Gamis Mizbeach Asher Basil, and he went to the temple in Basil Abama Asher Asa Yerovim. So he's really like he went the first king to the first time idol worship started was with Shlomo HaMelech's wives. So he went all the way back to Shlomo, and then he went back to the 10 tribes. He went all the way back to Yerovim. And part of doing, if a person wants to clean house, they've got to get all the cobwebs. They've got to go down to, you can't just get rid of the top layer of dirt, because if you get rid of the top layer and you still have the bottom layer, it's going to be there and you got to get underneath. And so he went all the way back. He went and got rid of it wherever it was found. So, and this energy to like totally remove and seek out all of these ancient idols and other things, that was a very strong statement. So he went back to the temple of Yerovim and Asher Hikdis Yisrael that caused the Jewish people to go astray. Gam Mizbeach Ahu Vesabama, and there was the Mizbeach and the Bama. He wiped it out. The Yisr Vesabama Hadak Lofer, and it's hard to turn stones into ashes and dust. Like he pounded them and he beat them. What?
He grinded down.
That's right. The Sarah Fashay burnt the trees of Ifin Yoshiyahu, and he turned the Yarasak for him. Now, when he went there, he noticed a strange thing. He noticed some unusual graves that were there. So the Medrash says that they had one grave that on one side were growing beautiful flowers and vegetation, and on the other side of the same grave were like weeds and cactuses and burnt out, and it was the same grave. And so he said, what kind of grave is it? What's the story there? So if you'll remember, there had been a true prophet that came to Yerovim and had tried to get him to come back and to do teshuva. And Yerovim said, if you remember, Yerovim listened to him momentarily, and he offered him to stay overnight and offered him some food, and he said, "No, I'm not allowed to eat here." And then a false prophet came to him and convinced him to come eat, and he said, "I had a prophecy from Hashem that you're supposed to eat with me." If you remember, the lion attacked him and he died there. So he was a good prophet who had made a big mistake. So he was buried there. And they took the false prophet who had convinced him to stay, and when he died, he got buried right next to the prophet of Hashem. And so from the prophet of Hashem was all these beautiful flowers and nice beds, and from the false prophet was the weeds and the... and so he saw that there, and he said, "What's the story? That's such an unusual grave." And there are, it's not a fun thing to do, but there are people that go, you can learn a lot. It's cemeteries, you know, people, they travel and there's a story behind everything. In Europe, in the city of, it used to be called Worms, or Vermeiza, that's where the Maram Rutenberg was buried. He was the chief rabbi of the Jewish people in Vienna of that time. And what happened was they took him a prisoner for ransom. And he had said that he was afraid that if he would allow the people to pay it, they would take the other rabbis and leaders for ransom, and all the Jewish people, he paying these taxes all the time, and he forbid them to ransom him. And so he was held in prison for 7 years. He eventually died there. And after he died, there was a Jew who just couldn't, you know, they didn't even bury him. They left him in the cell or whatever. There was a Jew who paid money to allow the body to be released. And he said his one condition was that he be buried next to the Maram Rutenberg. So for some reason, even though the Nazis, nobody knows why, you know, the luck of the draw, but that grave is still there of the Maram Rutenberg, and the grave of the fellow that had paid the money to have his body, and that's, you know, that's there, or the, whatever the, sometimes there's a story behind the grave, or behind a, what's, he saw those graves that were there, V'yishavi, and he took the bones, Minakvarim, V'yishavi, these were, part of the idol worship was they buried the priests next to the idols. They were buried, and again it was interesting. The churches adopt all the pagan practices because they wanted to basically they flipped the pagans into being Christians. So that's why you have the Christmas tree, and that's why you have a number of their practices are pagan origin. And one of them was that having the cemetery in the place of worship because they used to worship the dead. And so if you go, I think now because of sanitation, they don't allow it so much anymore, but you still see it everywhere you go, where the churches have the cemeteries on the premise and the bones. And the we differentiate our Kohanim, who are not even allowed to be anywhere near a cemetery. And it was, we're not a religion of the dead, and we pay our respects to the dead, but we don't worship the dead. And but that was a remnant of the pagans, and so next to these shrines there were these bones, and so the nature of people are is they go and they pray to the bones, or they pray to the old priests, and so he took those bones and he dug them up, and he burned them, and he burned their bones on the altars of the pagans. So here they took the bones of these priests and burned them on the community of Kedvar Hashem. And this was predicted. Hashem warned these priests. You know, you think you're doing a big thing, your own bones are going to burn on that altar that you're burning. Everything was predicted. Verse 10, he said, what is this that I see? The people say, that's the grave of, I jumped again, that's the grave of the man of Yehuda. And he had predicted what would happen on this altar. The Chavetz Chaim grew up in a small town, and during the winter there was a widow whose husband died, and because she didn't have a husband, she couldn't pay the rent. And the landlord said, I'm sorry, you know, I feel bad for you, but if you don't pay the rent, I have to evict you. And he evicted her in the winter in the Poland. Poland's winters were terrible, like they still are. And the Torah says that you have to be very careful how you treat a widow or a woman who's alone, and they have to be especially sensitive to their feelings. And the Chavetz Chaim saw this man who evicted her, and he just couldn't get over it. Like, how could Hashem not strike him dead? Such a wicked thing to like throw a woman out into the cold, and a widow and an orphan out in the cold, and just, you know, just for money. Like, you know, you can't do that. He was a Jewish man, and the lightning didn't come down and strike him. And the Chavetz Chaim lived to a long old age. He died in his 80s or his 90s, and I think 50 years later, this fellow got bitten by a wild dog, and he caught rabies. And he started drooling in the mouth, and he had a horrible death. And nobody remembered, you know, when he was younger, that he was not such a good landlord or whatever, he had done that. The Chavetz Chaim remembered, and he said, you know, now he says, you know, Hashem has patience with people. Sometimes they could do something. Lightning doesn't always strike them right away. They, you know, they have time to try to fix it, but if they don't fix what they've done wrong, we don't, you know, sometimes we get aggravated. We think someone mistreated us wrong. Don't worry, Hashem will take care. Just have a little patience, you know. I see that now with Syria. You know, Syria was never our good buddy over there. You know, they wish the worst things on Israel. You know, now it could be they're getting what they deserve. You know, I'm not Hashem. I don't really like to talk that way, but it's hard for me to feel bad for them. They weren't. If it has to happen somewhere, it couldn't happen to a.
What goes around comes
around. Right. That's
yeah.
It.
We're still waiting for it to come around to Germany.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's.
It will.
Yeah, that's true. That's one of the things that we didn't get to see. One of the miracles of Egypt was that we got to see that the Egyptians that were our taskmasters, we got to see them destroyed in the sea. That was a sign of Hashem's love that we got to see that. We never with Germany we haven't yet gotten to see that. That's true. It seemed like but there's this idea there has to be a patience. You know, there has to be a patience with it. And over here, this was over 100 years later that these idols and these shrines were destroyed. Verse 18. They said, "Leave the bones of the prophet of Hashem." They left that one. All the other graves were destroyed, but that one set of bones was saved. 19. He went to the capital city of Shomron, Asher Asu Malka Yisrael. He destroyed those temples were made by the Jews. Lahakis, they made them in spite. Hashi Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu removed them. The Yasim Kachol Maaseh Asave, and he did the same types of things. So this is like just a very, you know, verse after verse. He really, even though there were other kings that didn't worship idols and tried to stop it, none of them went quite to these lengths to uproot it. Yeah, it was a very strong thing. Vizes Kol Kohane Abam Asher Shama, and he slaughtered the Kohanim that were there. Vizes, and he burned their bones at Vayeshev Yerushalayim. And then after he finished, he went back to Yerushalayim. So this was really a strong. So the first thing is to make sure, as long as the people can go back and do the idols, as long as they can go back and sin in the same way, you're not going to be. It's almost like if you want to control illegal immigration, first you seal the border and keep them from coming in, and then you can deal with those that are here, right? You know, you've got to. You first have to. So the first step is to remove the idols, and then you could talk about, you know, the positives. So that's what he did. He made sure that people wouldn't go back to these idols. And I mentioned to you that people still manage to hide some idols. People want to, that you can't totally prevent things from happening if you don't have the people behind you. But he tried his best. Verse 21, Yitzav HaMelech Eskol HaAm. Now he said he wanted to make a national experience to excite the people and to pick them up and make them enthusiastic about serving Hashem. So he decided he was going to make a Pesach Seder to end all Pesach Seders. That was the Leimar Asu Pesach Lashem. And when you think about it, in Egypt, the Pesach Seder was chosen to wean the people from worshipping the god in Egypt, which was the lamb, to serving Hashem. And so included in Pesach is something about a new beginning. That's really part of the... We're not used to thinking of it that way, but he decided this would be the time, now that he'd uprooted all the idols, this was the time to make the Pesach Seder that would really motivate the people. Also, Pesach L'Hashem Elokeichem, let's make a Pesach Kahasuva Sefer Bris, like it has been written. Verse 22, now you might say, well, what about the Pesach? Kilo Nasa Pesach Hazeh. They had a Pesach, but not like this. First of all, not everybody came. The people of the 10 tribes that had been scattered had stopped coming for hundreds of years. And so they had not had a Pesach like this in many, many years. Also, people aren't allowed to participate in the Pesach Seder if they worship idols. And so, unfortunately, a lot of Jews worshipped idols. They traveled amongst the pagans, and they from time to time they worshipped the idols, and so they couldn't participate. And so this was the first time that nationally something had been done. Now, when you think about it, the entire rest of the world at this time worshipped idols. I read that they considered the Jews to be atheists because they said, well, if you can't see God, that means he doesn't exist. You know, the idea of an invisible God, they you know, so to them, if you don't have any idols, they view the Jews as being like, you know, these are our gods, where are yours? You know, show us your, and so it, the just People have a hard time living it where the whole rest of the world looks at it differently. I mean, we see that today. We know the whole rest of the world, the UN, the way they look at Israel, and we know how wrong they are. And we're convinced of that. They lived at a time where the whole world worshipped idols. He had made the first really strong attempt to wean everybody from idol worship. And they hadn't had, since the days of the judges, the Kol Yom Yisrael, during all the times of the kings, unfortunately, David HaMelech was the first king, but Shlomo, his son, already the people started worshiping the idols. It didn't last a long time. In other words, it was a very short window where the people really didn't worship idols. And so this was the first time. Verse 23, Ki'im, B'shmona Esrei Shana Melech, this was his 18th year. Nasa Pesach Hazel Hashem B'Yushalayim. He made a Pesach only to Hashem in Yushalayim. Verse 24, Gamis Avos Hiz Yidonim. Now, there were people that didn't worship idols, but they did a lot of hocus pocus. They did witchcraft. Witchcraft, they didn't see it as idolatry. They saw it as superstition. They saw it as soothsayers. There are people that don't see it as the opposite of Hashem. There were these forces of impurity. He got rid of those too. If you remember, Shaul HaMelech, the first king, and Nancy Reagan too, I think she asked the astrologist or whatever. There are people that tolerated these, so he got rid of that too. Gamis, obviously, you don't. That's the trophy, that's the glowing, that's kol hashkutzim. All these disgusting things, all these bad habits. I shared Nirubar. You sometimes saw in the land of Yerushalayim, Beer Yoshio Laman. He not only did get rid of the idols, he got rid of anything that was really not good. He got rid of. Why? Laman Hakimis Divrei Torah. In order that the words of the Torah be kept, Aksuvi Mal Sefer Shemot, he wanted to go by the book. That Kukia Koin Beis Hashem. Verse 25. V'kamohu lo hayu lefanav melech asher shav el Hashem b'kol levavo. And before him you never had, there was no other king who was quite like him, who had done teshuvah with all of his heart. But Kol Nasho, with all of his soul, this was an expensive undertaking to, it involved a huge amount of that. Kol HaTorah Moshe Ba'akrav, there was nobody like him before and nobody like him after. Really an amazing, person to, it wasn't an easy job, and there were other kings that weren't able to do this. And he really attempted to change the destiny that had been written in that scroll. Verse 26, but unfortunately, Achlo Yishav Hashem Mechor Napa Agada Shechora Apo Bihuda Kol HaKasa Mesher Hikis Menashe. Hashem didn't fully remove his anger, because the people, it was a movement to Teshuvah, but they weren't quite there. Verse 27, Yom Hashem Gamas Yudha Atzim Alpana. Hashem said, the same way I got rid of the 10 tribes because they weren't behaving. I had to send them away. I'm going to have to remove you to Kasher Siroses Yisrael. Uma'asti Yesi Irazos. And I will reject this city, Asher Bakarti, my chosen city, Asher Shalim. This Beis Asher Amarti Hashem Yisham. This is where my name would be. So he almost got there. There's more to be written on this story. The story is really a much greater story. We're describing something that took place over many years, many ups and many downs. He made the greatest attempt to bring the people back, but he wasn't totally successful. On his own, he was good, but he just didn't totally uproot. Things don't happen overnight. You can't change habits overnight, as we're going to see. Verse 28, V'yesedi v'yoshio v'kola she'asa, and the other things of Yoshio and all the things he did, haloksim v'asevi divra yam in the Malka Yehuda, they're written in these books. Now, what happened to him, and that's what we're going to describe now. Before we get there, just mention an interesting thing. In the scroll that he had written, it had written that Hashem would be angry with his people and send them away. It also says in the scroll, we're going to come back. Don't worry. We're God willing, we're waiting any day for the news that, and we're already there, right? There are a lot of, we all have family in Israel. We're all halfway there, hopefully, in our time soon. But in the scroll, it said that Israel would be overrun and that the city would be sacked. So there's a tradition that Shlomo HaMelech built a secret passageway under the temple to hide the Aron, because the Aron was the handiwork of Hashem, we couldn't allow that to be captured. And it's a known fact that Yoshiyahu hid the Aron. It was before the before 20-30 years before, I don't know how many years before the temple was destroyed, they no longer had the Aron in the Holy of Holies. It was hidden somewhere. And that's why you have movies about it. And people have been seeking out to find where they are in the Indiana Jones or whatever, or the find the Aron. It certainly wasn't in Nevada or wherever that was. The Medrash mentions that the Kohanim once noticed in a certain area that the tile and the flooring was different. Was new, with the cement in between the tiles. It's like if you look at an expert, when they look at a used car, the first thing they look at the car in different lights to see if it was in an accident and it might have been fixed. And if you're not an expert at this, you won't notice it. But the experts, they look at it and they can tell, even though they put the exact paint, sometimes it's a little different color or it's settled a little, and they can look at it the right way. What they did was this Kohen noticed that the flooring was put in at two different times under the and he started to tell another to tell people that he discovered the secret where this, and he keeled over and he in other words, he came back and he said, "I found it, let me tell you where it is." And the idea was that Hashem didn't want and it's interesting. I mean, today part of the problem is that the Muslims won't let us tunnel under the, but there are some areas where they're able to go down, and that's where they found some of the mikvahs and some of the underground tunnel. But secretly, that's why we're interested in that, because they may discover the Aron. You know, it could be there somewhere. Hopefully, we'll be worthy of it. And there are legends. There are different times in history where people thought they knew they found it in somewhere in a cave. You know, during the times of Yoshio, that's when it was hidden. Now, the background for the death of Yoshio was the Torah promises us that if we're doing the will of Hashem, Hashem will protect us from foreign armies. And so Yoshiyahu had done a lot, the people had promised him that they wouldn't worship idols, and he destroyed the idols. And when Paro wanted to cross through the land of Israel with his army, Yoshiyahu decided on his own that no, we're not going to allow you, and Hashem is going to protect us. But he didn't realize that and Hashem protects people when they're fully righteous. If you remember that even Yaakov Avinu was promised that Hashem told him to come back to Eretz Yisrael, he was still afraid that his brother Esav might harm him. So they all asked the question, Hashem promised you that you can come back. But he said, but maybe I've sinned and I'm not worthy of the promise. Even Yaakov Avinu wasn't sure. As long as a person's alive, we can feel good about the good things that we do, but we're always supposed to be cautious and be worried that maybe we could do more or we forgot something. You know, we're always supposed to think maybe, we're not supposed to assume that we have Hashem in our back pocket. We can never, you always have to, Hashem will protect us. We say Hashem will protect us after we've done everything we can. Once we've done everything we can, then it's in Hashem's hands. But we're supposed to do as much effort as we can. So he felt that we can rely on Hashem. We don't have to worry about these Egyptians and their archers and Hashem will protect us. And had the people been perfectly righteous, perhaps Hashem would. But his mistake was, sometimes when a person is so good, he can't imagine that other people aren't. And so he was so good and righteous that he couldn't imagine that people behind closed doors were still worshiping idols. But why was that a fault? So you could say that a king has to know where the people really are. He can't deceive himself about the level of the people. Other people say that he should have asked the prophet, "What should I do?" That's what the prophets were there for. And he just, on this one, he made the decision alone. And he didn't ask the prophet. And what happened was that he went to prevent the Egyptians from coming into the country, and they had these long-range bows that were the newest technology of the times, and they shot the king. And he had dozens of arrows, and he was killed. And as he was dying, they brought him back to Yerushalayim, and he said that Hashem was righteous. He had erred by not, you know, seeking advice. But it was almost like the sun set in midday. He didn't die of natural causes. It was the shame, because perhaps had he lived longer, who knows what he could have done. So this is what it says over here, verse 29. V'yamavolo Paro Nacho Melech Mitzrayim, Paro the lame. There was a certain king Paro that was his name, was Paro Nacho. Some people say he was lame, that he couldn't, had a problem with his feet. Went up to Yishlam Melech Asher Al Nahar Pras. The king of Egypt actually said, didn't come to attack the Jewish people. He said, just let my army go through. Now, the truth be told, nobody likes to let an army go through the country, because when you get armies that are rowdy, they sometimes, there's damages that happen. I mean, the Revolutionary War, part of the reason was the British would keep their army inside the city, and people had to take care of the soldiers and feed them and protect their daughters from them. And it was part of the anger at the British was that they would keep the armies in that the colonists had to provide for the British armies. That was one of the, nobody wants an army in their country. Today the armies are self-sufficient. In other words, they provide for, in those days the armies, they would expect the people along the way to, the soldiers would go and they would privately enrich themselves and take booty and take provisions from the household when they passed through. So I'm defending Yoshiyahu, why he didn't want, nobody would be excited about having the Egyptian army pass through the land of Israel. Mm-hmm. But the army itself wasn't coming to conquer, they would just wanted to pass through. But he said no. It is a Jewish trait. We're a very proud people. We rebelled against the Romans, because we couldn't come to an accommodation with them, because the Jews are very proud, very, very self-sufficient. We can't bear to see a foreign army on our land. That's the reality of it. So he came and he died in Megiddo, in Armageddon. That's what they call it now, Megiddo. Kirososo, when he saw him. His servants brought him to Yerushalayim, where he was buried in his grave. Now, a very interesting thing happens afterwards. Who's the king that will take over? It says a funny expression here on verse 30. It says, the people of the land, it almost sounds like the politicians and the important people didn't make this decision, but some simple people, the people around there, just said, okay, now the king's son, Yachas, will be king. He was replacing his king. His name was Yachas, 31, Ben Esim Shoshan Yachas Mamalko, Ushosh Kadashim, and he only lasted 3 months. We had this before. The bad kings Hashem had very little patience with. We also have very little patience, you know, coming after somebody like that. And V'shem Imo Chamuto Bas Yirmiyahu Melivna, and the mother's name was Chamuto. 32, V'yasa Rabbeinei Hashem Kol Hashasa Avosav. He was evil in the eyes of Hashem like his forefathers. We had, you know, that he means not Yoshiyahu, but the previous kings. He went back. Verse 33, and the Egypt by now, who was the power that controlled, he came and he had the king tied up and imprisoned in Yerushalayim, and the Yiten Onish Esoretz Mea Kestav, and he levied taxes on the land, the kickers of gold and silver. 34, and he made a different king in charge. He made the different king, El Yakim, Takot Yoshiyahu, Vesav Eshmo, and he even changed the king's name. Now, when you want to humiliate a people, you say, you know, not only am I going to tell you who's going to be your boss, but he's going to take the name that I want him to have. And so Paro gave him a name, Yoyakim, Vesyochaz, Lachav, Vyavo, and he took the other king to Mitzrayim and Vyamasham, and he died there. So again, Yoshiyahu died, and one of his sons was temporarily king for 3 months, but he was a rotten apple, and quickly Paro deposed him, and he put another son there. Verse 35, and he made taxes on the Jewish people, and Yoyakim paid the taxes to Paro. And he levied a tax according to what people could afford. They debate whether he did a good thing or not, and how he levied taxes. But we have the same debate today, whether the tax system is fair or not fair. Some people say he did it fairly because he levied it equally according to who could afford more. And other people say it's unfair. Why should some people pay twice as much as others? How do you know who makes more and who makes less? And you can turn on the news if you want to hear this debate. That's right. But it's just interesting. The commentators themselves discuss whether or not this taxation was the right taxation. Either way, that was this new king. Menasseh Kamishan Miyakum, he was 25 years old. Akathesheshan, he was king of Yerushalayim 11 years. The shame Emo, his mother's name was Vadya Baspadaya ben Roma. I don't know where Roma is. But he was not a good king either. Yasarab Eneashem Kakola Shaosa Vosaf. And so that's the story of such a shame. After on Tisha B'Av, one of the first kinos is about Yoshiyahu, because the tragedy was that he was the right person. He could have done it. He really started the national movement, really, that almost brought the people back. Okay, stuff here.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.